Okay, so you can real quickly check if you've got your phone on you, if it's an Apple product. You can pull it out, go to your settings, and two sections down on your settings will be a heading called Screen Time. And you can check your average. So of the people I've checked so far in the room on staff, Bryn's was lowest at 215 or something like that. Mine is 432 average a day, 4 hours and 32 minutes a day. I don't know what all counts and what doesn't. I spend a lot of times listening to podcasts, not looking at it while I'm working on other things. So I assume that counts. I don't know if it counts that or not. Is it when the screen is on? Is it when there's a program running? I don't know. Holland's was only 415. He actually has me beat low as far as lower than mine. I'm sure it's less valuable activity than mine, though. That's what I'm going to... I really don't know that. What was yours? What was yours, John?
Mine was six
something?
Yeah,
635. So far, Mama Good was seven something as the winner with the most. Yeah? Is this the daily average? Mine says daily average. So there you go. You can actually set it so that when you hit a certain number in a day, your phone turns off. What was yours, John? I can't see fingers. Three? Yeah, that seems to be pretty common. So three is about half of the average that was up there. So the 2767 hours a year that Chris just shared with us, there's 8760 total hours in a year. That represents approximately 1 hour in every three is spent on the phone or on a device like that. So that's kind of amazing when you consider when Chris said we're sitting ducks for false teaching. And then it's like we're sitting ducks for false teaching, and then we're inviting the hunters to come join us in our homes and in our bedrooms, and then we're sitting ducks. So just being very, very aware is super important. People get mad at me when they go to watch a movie with me because I rip apart the worldview stuff within the movie and the quality of the movie too. But like I'm always evaluating, like, did you see that message? Did you catch that message? Did you see that lie? Did you catch that lie? It's like constantly being thrown at us, and most people are passive recipients of that stuff, and that's what we're working against right now. What we're going to be talking today, this is not kid stuff, okay? This is real combat. This is real war, and so I apologize a little bit for the fact that for years, since I was 19 and a student minister, I was always being told, hey, don't push students too hard. Hey, they have a really terrible attention span. They really can't follow hard things, etc. And I've just decided that's not true, and if it is true, I don't care. I'm going to ignore it. This stuff really matters, and so we can't arm you with kid toys when it comes to the kind of stuff we're going to be talking about. So this talk's going to be a little bit in-depth. It's not going to be several hours long like it was last time I was down at Grace, but it was. This is going to be kind of in-depth, and I kind of apologize for that, but I don't that much because it's that important. Instead, we need to be preparing you guys and arming you guys and equipping you guys with the real thing, with real weapons, with the stuff that really is going to work. And I really believe you're competent to do this and capable to handle this. That's why you're here, is you're ready to have this conversation and you know it's coming. We don't just want young people at our church. This is not a measure of success to say, hey, look how many young people we had come to our church. What we want is equipped young people. We want godly young people and families. We want people prepared to push back against the world and continue to hold back that tide that your parents and grandparents and great-grandparents did. They've been pushing back, and the pressure gets higher and stronger, but the more ground that's given, the more the pressure comes. And we want future ministers and even current ministers. Right now is when ministry needs to be happening. By the time you get out of high school or college, very often many of your friends, their viewpoints on things are pretty set. And often your viewpoints on things will be pretty set in place. And so if you're going to become a Christian, typically that's going to happen before you're in your 20s. Because after that, we've kind of made our decision, and that's not always true. Obviously, many people convert as adults or decide to change their life as an adult, but it gets more difficult. I was asked one time, do I want my children to follow or vote or protest whatever because of what they believe? And my answer was no, not unless what they believe is the truth. If what they believe is the truth, I want them to be prepared to die for it. If what they believe is a fad, then I want them to not be prepared to invest hardly anything in it. That's not worthwhile. And so I want that for our church. I want that for the youth of our church and for the youth of our capital C, the church in America. We're really, in many ways, counting on you guys to be the ones who create a change of direction in our culture. So far, we've been unable to accomplish the change of direction that's been moving one direction for about 50 years, 60 years, and we've not managed to adjust the change, and we're really counting, in many ways, on you guys. So us educating and training and equipping you. And on top of that, I don't want to lose you to lies. If we lose you to some other truth or to something that you get that's more true than what we teach here, that's fine. That's a better picture of the truth. But the draw of the delusional is super tempting. It's incredibly tempting. If there is no truth, then there is no way to know anything or depend on anything. If there is no truth, then fundamentally that's going to mean there is no God. Because if there's going to be a God, then that by definition, the fact that a God exists would mean that truth would have to exist. If there is no God, it's only me and no one to create or define anything but me, especially about me. I cannot tell you how much this kind of thing feels desperate to me and the team of teachers. To you, it's very normal, but to me, I feel like there's a wall that some of you guys you're sprinting and you're just getting faster and faster, and there's a wall around the corner, and you don't see it coming. And I feel like so much of what we do at this worldview thing is like trying to tell you, like, just recognize this is going to happen, this is coming. And it's not a fear-based thing; it's a preparation-based thing. I'm not a fear-based person, hardly at all. I'm a preparation-based person. I say when I see that there's a problem. My motivation is to fix it. I'm a very low anxiety, very low fear based person. So I had a friend tease me that I'm probably burnout proof, and I said, "Why do you think I'm burnout proof?" He said, "Because if there's something that you don't like about your life, you're going to break it or fix it or do something to change it." And I think that's true. And I'm trying to tell you guys, this is coming. You've got to be prepared to face these things, and they're going to break you, or you're going to break them, and these things are going to, and also to know this, especially for the young people, this is vitally important. You always have us to reach out to. 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, when you face a wall that you don't know what to do with, that your faith seems like it is insurmountable, that it is the gate of hell that your faith it will not knock down, then you reach out. I promise you there is someone who's faced it before, and you always need to have this in your mind. Part of why we do stuff like these, like the Reconstructed Faith podcast that Chris Sherrod and I are doing, if you haven't found that yet, I encourage you to look at that. Or the many other thousands of wonderful opportunities that you can learn to face these. There are people writing about this stuff. There are people who can help work through these things. I promise you there's not going to come up a new question that people haven't been writing about and engaging with for 2,000 years. Really, really, really smart people. And so just knowing that, let that give you some confidence to know there's nothing that you're going to face that hasn't been faced before. In 2 Timothy, Paul says to his student Timothy, "Preach the word, be ready in season and out of season, reprove, rebuke, and exhort with complete patience and teaching. For the time is coming when people will not endure sound teaching, but will have itching ears. They will accumulate for themselves teachers to suit their own passions and will turn away from listening to the truth, and they will wander off into myths." It's true, for all of us are tempted to do this. We want to hear what already we like. Very rarely, especially once you get older. Do you ever listen to new music anymore once you get older? Not often. Usually you listen to stuff you already know you like, right? You choose things you like. You read books you like. You watch movies you know you're going to like. You don't try new things very often. And so the natural tendency is for us to go to listen to people who say what we want to hear. That's an echo chamber. In America, we're seeing that in ways unlike ever before, where people are literally moving states to be around people who already agree with them. They're moving from one state to another to be surrounded by people who agree with them. This is a wild concept. So with this, what I'm going to be talking about today for a few minutes, this idea of truth, this is tough. And I wanted to dive into this and study this at a whole other level. So this is master's level right here conversation we're about to have for the next few minutes on the concept of truth. So I'm going to be demanding a lot of you as we have this part of the conversation, but I feel like otherwise I'm handing you plastic little ninja weapons to face the real thing, and I don't think that's worthwhile. I'd rather you get a little bit of this. First thing we know about truth that everyone seems to agree is that truth is treasure. Here's how we know this. Truth is wildly sought after. Everyone is seeking truth. Everyone is. Now, this, of course, is based on the assumption that there's such a thing as truth. What's wild to me is that even people who claim there is no such thing as truth are still wildly seeking after it. Because, I will just go ahead and throw out there, no one lives as though there's no such thing as truth. They may say there's no such thing as truth, but obviously to say there's no such thing as truth is to deny the idea that there's no such thing as truth. If I say there's no such thing as truth, then I'm making a truth claim when I say it. When I say there's no such thing as truth, you should ask, well, is that true? Is what you just said true? Is that accurate or right? It is not. I'm not going to spend any more time here because all of us have enough of a brain. I think many pets have enough of a brain to recognize, of course, there is such a thing as truth. All the pets, all the animals in the world live as though there's such a thing as truth. Even little animals and dumb ones live as though there's such a thing as truth. It's okay for us as humans to live according to this fact. There is such a thing as truth. We all know it and we all live according to that. Anyone who doesn't live according to that doesn't live very long at all. They end up dead very, very quickly, usually hit by a large moving object. It's not something that's going to happen. But let me tell you how much this is happening. As a therapist right now, I have several therapist students who are in secular programs and non-Christian counseling programs, which can be great education. But what's wild to me is how often they're being told stuff like this. Check your values at the door. So your therapist, when you walk in to do counseling with somebody, they're professors. These are PhD-level professors saying, you need to check your values at the door. What's the problem with that? That is a value. Am I supposed to check that one? And the value of checking your values at the door, is that one I'm supposed to check at the door? It's a nonsensical statement. It's a self-refuting statement. Check your values at the door, like that one. So I'm supposed to check that one too? You mean I'm not supposed to care about my client? Well, yeah, you are supposed to care about it. Okay, that would be a value. Should I be trained as a therapist? After all, I'm taking master's level classes with you so that I can counsel people. Is education important to counseling? Yes. So is that one I'm supposed to check at the door too? It is nonsensical, and yet these are master's level students being taught that, and sometimes when they hear from me, that's dumb, it's the first time they've questioned it. We have got to develop the habit of questioning this type of junk. That when people say these type of things, that you go, wait a minute, that's to deny that is to accept it. To accept it is to deny it. There's no coherent way to deny the existence of truth. Now, of course, we can debate our ability to distinguish truth from untruth. Of course, we can do that. But that is not the same thing as denying its existence. There is such a thing as truth, and people are paying billions and working hard to discover what this truth is. Why? What is this about? What's going on here? Imagine the advantage in every sphere of life of someone who can accurately experience and communicate reality over someone who can't. Some of you may know who Sun Tzu is. Sun Tzu, who wrote The Art of War, writes over and over again in the book The Art of War, considered maybe the greatest basic strategic manual of all time, things like this: all warfare is based on deception. According to Sun Tzu, if you know the truth, you know everything. Because all warfare is based on deception. If you know the enemy and know yourself, you need not fear the result of 100 battles. If you know the truth about you and you know the truth about your enemy, you don't ever have to be afraid again. Because truth is that valuable. It is the difference between winning and losing a war. It is the difference between success and failure in every single endeavor. If you're driving down the road, you need to know the truth about how fast you're going and what side of the road you're on, for example. If you don't know that, you don't live long. Think about how everything in life is based on this. Am I hungry or not? Should I sleep or not? What should I do with this money or not? If you knew the truth about what was going to happen, if you could go back in time, this is why time travel is so fascinating when it comes to something like investment. Imagine if you could go back in time and start betting on sporting games. What would knowing the truth be worth to you? At limitless funds, right? Essentially, yeah. If you knew just the next year how the stock market was going to do, just that truth, what would that be worth to you? People are killing themselves and they're going crazy trying to find this. So let's define it. Let's define what it is, what truth actually is. You think this would be easy? Not so much. I don't believe that your generation will be convinced to hold on anything outside of the motivation of truth. I think your generation, young people, you're coming to the place where you're going, you know what, I'm done with hype. It's going to be truth, or I'm not holding on to it. And it's part of why we want you here is because when you get into school and they start pushing against everything, only things that are strong will stand. Only lighthouses will withstand the storm. Boats aren't going to withstand this storm. All the boats are going to be destroyed. It better not be floating on somebody else's faith. It better be anchored on rock, or it's going to get washed away. That's what I think is happening. I think it's going to happen in the church. I think very easily by the time I retire from being a pastor, we will see numbers within the church crater. We may not. Your generation may make a turning for us, to turn it around. Praise God, that'd be awesome. But I think most Christians aren't prepared for persecution. And I think it's going to be really tough when people face it. Other motivations other than the conviction of truth are failing. People who are not confident that what they have is actually the truth, by the way, become defensive and controlling. When you run into Christians who are defensive and controlling, that means they don't actually believe what they believe. If you do, you don't have to be defensive and controlling. The truth doesn't need our help being truth. It's really handy that we don't have to fight about it. So what's happening is we're watching the other side of this argument very often. They're the ones who are picking the fights. You know why? Because they're not confident. They actually don't know. They express a lot of confidence. If you've got to walk around all tough with your karate uniform on and a black belt on all the time, and you got to do that kind of thing all the time, what do you know automatically about this person? Yeah, they're afraid, right? The real ones don't have to do that. So what is truth? What do we mean when we say the word truth? Here's what we mean when we say the word truth, is that there is such a thing as reality. That's what we're saying. There are right and wrong ways to describe reality. But there is such a thing as reality. There are things that are real and things that are not real. There is this concept. In other words, as Michael Scott would say, it is what it is. This is the deal. This is the truth is when you say what is what is. That sounds really goofy. But I studied this deeply to be prepared to talk to you. I spent way more time on this than I thought I would have to. Let me just tell you. So I'm really skimming the edge for you guys to try to help you get, like, what are these basics? So here's what has been meant for thousands upon thousands of years when you use the word truth. And this is what you think it means too, intuitively. You ready? What you mean is what's called the correspondence theory. For those of you who care about this is the correspondence theory of truth. It's the one all of us believe. And by all of us, I mean everyone who's not schizophrenic. The correspondence theory of truth. In other words, what is. And that's going to get more complicated. Ready? What is not, is not. There you go. You just got the entire correspondence theory of truth. In other words, this is an apple. This is a statement of truth. And it is an apple. I made the claim, it's an apple. It, in fact, is an apple. Therefore, it's true. It corresponds. The statement corresponds to reality. That's the correspondence theory. This also is one. Ready? This is not an apple. This is also a statement of truth, even though it's stated negatively. What is, and remember, what isn't. Right? Now, you may be going, this is like, feels like you're treating us like we're handicapped. I'm telling you, this is at the philosophical level, at the PhD level, this is what they're fighting about. Now, they're still driving on the right side of the road if it's in America, but they're still claiming this is not necessarily the idea. This is what is not. That's the correspondence theory. Is this an apple? No. And I said it's not an apple, therefore this truth claim and reality match. Therefore, it is true. Good? Are you following this? Not so hard, not too hard so far, right? Good. Okay, ready to step it up? This would be false because it doesn't correspond to reality. The truth claim is that this is an apple. Is it an apple? No, it is not. Therefore, they do not correspond. The truth claim and reality do not correspond. Therefore, it is false. Or this. This is another way of doing it. The truth claim, this is not an apple, does not correspond to reality because it is an apple. Therefore, it is not true. Are we all good? If we could agree on this, we have made huge headway. We are way ahead of most PhD philosophers right now in this room, just so you'll know. People are publishing books left and right. We're ahead of them. We're kicking their tail at this point. Now notice, the truth, the reality comes from where? Inside of me or outside of me? Outside of me. Are y'all hearing this? This is an important step. The reality is not dependent on me. Whether that's an apple or not is not dependent on me. The claim comes from me. The reality is outside of me. So far, so good? This is the step that trips people up. The claim can come from me. The reality is outside of me. The correspondence theory of truth says, does what comes from me match what is outside of me? If it does, it's truth. If it doesn't, it's false. So what comes out of me, the claim, we have a lot of words for that claim, by the way, because it's an important concept, this claim. It's words like opinion, value, perspective, belief, point of view. These all represent efforts at expressing truth. But they aren't true unless they correspond to the reality that is outside of me. So far, we're still tracking. This puts us ahead of another famous person. Got sound? Let's skip ahead a little bit.
You can't go on alone.
Yoda will always be with you.
Obi-Wan. Why didn't you tell me? You told me Vader betrayed and murdered my father.
Your father was seduced by the dark side of the Force. He ceased to be Anakin Skywalker and became Darth Vader. When that happened, the good man who was your father was destroyed. So what I told you was true, from a certain point of view.
A certain point of view?
Luke, you're going to find that many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view. Anakin?
All right. If I may, from stage at the church, I'm going to call BS on Obi-Wan here. All right? So Obi-Wan is saying that the truth that we cling to is dependent on our own point of view. What is dependent on our own point of view? Our point of view is. Our point of view is greatly dependent on our own point of view. That would be an accurate statement. This is an apple. Truth is in, let's rephrase Obi-Wan's words here, truth is in no way dependent on my point of view, none. Reality is not dependent on my point of view. Reality doesn't care about my feelings or my point of view or my opinions. Reality doesn't care about that. Reality is disinterested. It's not from within me. It's outside of me. It is something that exists outside of me. If what I say matches reality, then it's true. Darth Vader betrayed and murdered your father, Luke. That's a truth claim. Darth Vader betrayed and murdered your father. That's a truth claim. The reality is Darth Vader is your father. Okay? Is it an apple or not? No. He lied. So it's lying if you know that your truth claim is false. Now, you can be just wrong. You can make a truth claim and it not match reality, and you thought it was the truth. That's what most of us do most of the time. For example, on most of our math tests or anatomy physiology tests, right? Am I right? So that you go, no, I think this is the right. This is the truth. Boom. This is right. This is my point of view. This is my perspective. This is my truth claim. I put it down. It does not match reality. Therefore, it is false. Another word for false is wrong, incorrect, right? It doesn't match reality. Therefore, it's not that thing. Are you following me so far? Still, are we still tracking? I want to make sure because this stuff is, you'd be amazed how important this stuff is when studying truth. So if I know when I say it, it's not true, we call that a lie, and it's immoral, typically immoral. There's rare circumstances when the lie is moral, but typically it is immoral to say something that is not true, and you know it's not true when you claim it, right? Again, also, you could just be wrong. You can say it and you think it's the truth. You think this is reality, but it turns out not to be reality. And that's called a mistake or an error or whatever. Are you following so far with those ideas too? Good. So, yes, the things we think of as truth, but we mean as opinion, those happen all the time. And there's sometimes when we make an opinion claim, right? We make it sounds like a truth claim, but it's really an opinion claim. If I say, listen, the Monkees were the best bands of the 1970s, okay? If I make that, okay? Now, am I making a truth claim? Not really, and you don't think I am. Now, here's what's wild. This is, it gets a little confusing. I could say, my opinion is that the Monkees are the best bands of the 1970s, and the problem is you have no way of knowing if that's reality or not, meaning you don't know if I really think that, because I've made a truth claim about an opinion. See how this gets confusing all of a sudden? That if I say, I'm making a truth claim about my opinion, and the only way you could know the reality is I'm the one who knows the only reality as to whether or not that is the truth. It's not. I mean, I like the Monkees, but they're not that good. So this is officially called the correspondence theory of truth. I will submit to you it is the only actual theory of truth. It's the only rational understanding of truth. All the other theories we're about to look at are based on merely psychological explanations of our delusions. Our delusion is that the delusion is this, that truth comes from inside of me. That reality comes from inside of me. This is, by the way, more Americans than not believe that statement. So you'll know that reality is determined by me. They actually believe that. Now, in psychological term, for 150 years, we have called that nuts. Okay? That's insane to believe that reality comes from inside of you. You don't get to dictate reality. But that's how that is being taught more and more, and it is delusional. I can't even make an argument for them, but I am going to try to explain them for you. So there is some psychological accuracy to the statement, we don't see things as they are, we see things as we are. But again, this would be based on truth claims, not reality. The reality doesn't change even based on how I see it. If I close my eyes, you don't cease to exist. No, you're still there. You don't cease to exist. That would be the idea. Reality is determined. My experience is changed by that. So these are some important concepts. The truth versus discovering truth are not, they're not the same thing. Truth is not a process. Discovering truth is a process. Theories based on the idea that truth comes within us, these are based on different things like one which is called the coherence model, the coherence theory. The coherence theory says, and this, you don't have to spend a lot of, I'm not going to spend a lot of time here because this is the stuff that Obi-Wan Kenobi is saying, all righty? We're just going to go with that. This is Obi-Wan Kenobi perspective. So this is the idea that something is true if it fits. Does it fit? So does it fit with all my other beliefs? Well, then it must be true. Again, this doesn't work. But this is a common teaching. This is one of the common teachings of truth. Now, certainly, this may be what I mean when I say truth. And let's help you out with something. Coherence is a good way to test truth. In other words, if I say, this is the question being brought in when you say God is a loving God, but he causes suffering. If you go, that's not coherent. A and B don't go together. So one of them must be false. That's the challenge happening. Now, that turns out that neither one of those is false, and yet that's what we mean by coherence. But if you say this, you've done this with your parents plenty of times, when what they say doesn't match with what they said in the past. When you go, hey, can I have some of my Halloween candy? And they go, no, you can't have Halloween candy. It's not good to eat candy this late. And you say, but you're eating my Halloween candy this late, right? That's what you say back to them. You're eating candy, and what do they say? Yeah, but I'm a grown-up, right? That's not incoherent. This isn't hypocrisy. This is not incoherent. This is just the rules are different for me than they are for you, and that is objectively accurate. That is outside. That is true, right? But what you've challenged them on is their coherence. You say this, but you do this. My kids call me out on doing things on my phone in the car. And rightfully they do so, by the way. I deserve it. But when I'm doing something on my phone in the car and they call me out on it, they're like, would you be okay if I was doing that in the car? Like, no, that's really dangerous and dumb, right? Don't do that. Well, you're doing it. But I'm an adult. It's a different. Like, it's like, I can't die. This is a, no, that's a lie. That's, and you're calling out the coherence. And coherence is a good way to test truth. But you could have a coherent combination of truth in your mind that is based on lies. And it's all lies. It's all fundamentally lies because it doesn't match reality. So think about every fiction book you've ever read. You read Harry Potter. Is it coherent? I mean, relatively so. Yeah. Science fiction, Star Wars, is it coherent? Yeah, relatively so. Is it true? No, because it doesn't match reality. So therefore, it still can be not true. Let me tell you a place where you're seeing this. This is really good. Do our perspectives influence truth is the problem. So for example, if I say women's sports are for women, that's why women's sports exists, is so that women can compete with one another without having to compete against a male. That's why they came into existence. There's an inequity. We could all compete with one another all the time, and in almost all the sports, all of them would be won all the time by men. Because there's almost no sport that women at the apex can beat men at the apex. Almost none. It's the ray of reality. We're just biologically developed that way when it comes to that. Unless the sport is something like childbearing, which in which case the women win all of those, right? They always win that sport. So what is it? But you go, okay, but here's the deal. So that we believe that. Okay, there's a statement. Okay, good. Women's sports is for women. And then we tell this young man that he's a woman. He declares he's a woman. We say he's a woman. We agree with him that he's a woman. And so then, if he is a woman, then coherence would say, then he should be able to compete in women's sports. See how that's coherent? If A, then B. Well, A and B works if you accept either one of them. If you take this and you end up with men, males, in female sports, because we've decided people get to decide what sex they are, and so they decide that from the inside. We've decided that's an opinion. That's a truth. That's their truth, which is that's a misnomer. There's no such thing as your truth. And it comes because no truth comes from inside of you. Your statement of truth comes. It either matches reality or it doesn't. In this case, it doesn't. But the problem is our culture has decided coherence model is more important than correspondence model. It doesn't matter where it corresponds to the truth. What matters is it coherent within our culture? The problem with coherence model is then all the other pieces have to fit. All the other coherent pieces have to work too. What are women's shelters for? They protect women from crazy men. That's what it's for. So what if a crazy man thinks he is a woman? Well, the correspondence theory would say, but he's a man, so he can't come in. His statement of claim, his claim, his truth claim doesn't match the reality, so he's wrong. He's not a woman, so he can't come in. But what if we say, no, correspondence theory demands, coherence theory demands that we do match this all up, and he is a woman. So then what do you do if you're the policeman standing at the door at the women's shelter and a man walks up pursuing a woman who he's already beaten up once? She's coming to the shelter to get away from him, and he comes up and he says, I'm a woman, let me in. So the correspondence theory says, you've made a truth claim, I'm a woman. I can check very easily on whether or not you are. And if you're not, then it's not true. See? Easy. Correspondence theory. What human beings have called truth for 35,000 years. Versus the coherence theory, which says, no, it's coherent that he gets to claim this. So he gets in. This is the coherence theory. It's based on the assumption that truth comes, reality comes from inside of us, at least reality about us, comes from inside of us. Doesn't work. Why not? Things built on themselves are illusions. You don't get, I know this is going to be shocking to, I don't know if we have any youth here left who went to the camp in Arkansas the first time we went. Rivers don't actually make circles. They don't. I guess no one was here for that. That was a lot of people riding down the river thinking that the river in Arkansas was going to make a complete circle and come back to camp. See, they don't do that. Only in illusions can you walk upstairs in a circle. That's only an illusion. Things depending on themselves, things supporting themselves don't work. This is also fits with what's called the deflation theory of truth. The deflation theory of truth is that truth doesn't mean anything at all. It isn't that there isn't such a thing as truth. It's that when we use the word truth, we don't mean anything by it. So in other words, if I say, that is an apple, and the truth is that's an apple, I've said the same thing. In my opinion, the deflation theory just says the original one. We just don't have to use the word because we're making a truth claim, and either it's true or it's not. But this says we need to deflate our value of the word truth into essentially a noise. The logic of morality is part of this, the internal logic only. It has no external input. Deflationism says whatever we say, we don't really mean anything by it. Here's the problem. You ready for it? I want you to imagine, I know many of you are Baptists, and so this may be a hard analogy for you, but you know, do your best. Imagine if I drink vodka and water, vodka and ice, and I get drunk, okay? And so the next night, I drink bourbon and ice, and I get drunk. And then the next night, I have whiskey and ice, and I get drunk. And what is the coherence or deflation theory going to tell me? Ice makes me drunk. And there's no way to disprove that, because it's coherent. Make sense? If I say ice makes me drunk, or the truth is ice makes me drunk, that would be the deflation theory. It doesn't matter what I say. The correspondence theory, remember, that's the one sane people have. That's the this is an apple theory. Yes, like all of you smart people in the room, this is the apple theory, says that. Understand the problem is with coherence, there's no way to disprove those. I can't say, let me offer up a different theory. Those other three things have alcohol in them, and alcohol makes you drunk. And you could go, no, ice makes me drunk. I can prove it. All three times I had ice. That's coherence. It works. And I would say, well, we need to look at an outside source. What does the external source say? What is ice? Can ice make you drunk? No, it can't. So therefore, it can't be the ice. Now notice, everyone still lives as though that's the truth. Everyone. Whether they say it or not, I promise you, they're not cutting back on ice to stay sober. No one does that. But they talk about it. Now, what I love is this. We're going to have some more fun with this in just a second. I want you to go ahead and wrap your brain around the concept of optical illusions and how that's going to play out in our talk about truth here in a minute. Because doesn't the concept of optical illusions prove that you can't trust reality outside of yourself? Isn't that proof that truth isn't an external reality? We'll get there. Hall and I were watching a video on this, and this was our favorite moment in the video. We were watching two, like, truth experts, only one of whom actually was. The one thought he was, and the other one was. And they were in a debate, and it was not pretty. It was like me fighting Mike Tyson. I mean, it was ugly. It went down very quickly. But here's what I want you to think. I'm going to show you now the fourth argument for what truth is. Ready? Some of you will remember this moment.
But I want to say one thing to the American people. I want you to listen to me. I'm going to say this again. I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.
All right. So here's what's interesting. As a poker player and a psychologist, I remember watching that. I wasn't much of a poker player then. I remember watching that and going, he lied. He's got about a handful of tells. Everybody talked about what a good liar Bill Clinton was. He's actually not that great at it, but he was just well-practiced at it. Bill Clinton accomplished, here's what I want you to think about, though. For those of you who don't know who Bill Clinton really was, one of the presidents of the United States a few years ago, the 42nd, if I remember correctly. But Bill Clinton accomplished some very important policies during his presidency, some focused on rights for women. The fact that he abused his power to get what he wanted from this one woman, and by the way, he did have sexual relations with Monica Lewinsky, and he did tell people to lie about it, and he did lie about it several times, not only to the American people, but under oath. Despite the radical power imbalance that he had with this woman, shouldn't the fact that this untruth was effective for greater purposes actually translate his lies into something more true? After all, they worked. His version of events, though inaccurate, worked out in ways that were important to many people in America. Let me ask you this as Christians. What if Clinton had been pro-life? Would we have felt differently about his lies? What if Clinton had been pro-Jesus? Would we have felt different about his lies? What if the lie serves a greater cause? Isn't truth more than just making a truth claim and having it match reality? Isn't there more to it than that? Isn't his version of events, though inaccurate, worked out important? Shouldn't what we claim serve a higher cause than merely being accurate? How many religious leaders, political leaders, pastors, parents, students, missionaries have told themselves that very thing? This version of truth, this theory of truth, is called pragmatism. The one that I just unleashed for you is called pragmatism. The pragmatic theory is that truth is true if it's useful. Truth is true if it works. True beliefs should not be accepted until you see the results of the truth or the untruth. That's the claim. Was it true? Well, we'll know later when we see how things work out. That is literally the argument, and there are many, many Americans who hold to this view of truth. They may not verbalize it, but they do. William James, the father of modern psychology, said that truth claims should be based on utility. How useful are they? How valuable are they? And if it accomplishes what we want it to accomplish, then it must be true. Notice that these are based on the assumption that truth comes from inside of us. Having a certain view gets me what I want in life. Why has there been a meaningful increase in the approval of same-sex marriages over the last 20 years? It's up about 15% across the board among evangelicals. Evangelicals are 15% more likely across the board of every age than they were 10 to 15 years ago to approve of same-sex marriages. Why is that? Has there been some fundamental change in our scriptural understanding? There's not. Is there a fundamental change in the morality of this or of God's definition of marriage? There's not. What's changed is it works better for us to believe in same-sex marriage. We get less persecution, we get less pressure, we get less rejection, we get less offended. We're on the right side of history. It has social capital now to believe in that versus not believing in it. How many Christians believe in some version of the pragmatic view of truth? A decent percentage, apparently. Because we're willing to change our views of truth based on what our culture is doing. That's a pragmatic view of truth. There was a day when being a Christian got you good business in Tyler, Texas. Now it may cost you business, even in Tyler, Texas, to hold certain views. It may cost you jobs. Well, I better change what I believe about the truth then, right? We've all bought into this at some level. Ready? I'll show you. How many of you have put an answer on a test or written a paper in school telling the professor what they wanted to hear, not what you knew was true? Why? For the grade. That's pragmatism. Now, you may not have actually believed it was true. You may have known the whole time it was Obi-Wan Kenobi. But you're still. Notice how tempting this can be for us. Pragmatism is the root of all kinds of awful things. Nazi Germany's view of truth was pragmatic, was the pragmatic view of truth. The writings of the Nazi leaders cover this constantly. Goebbels, one of the leading Nazis, talked about how the big lie was more convincing than the small lie. Adolf Hitler said stuff like that too. If you tell the same lie over and over and over again, eventually people will start to believe it. It didn't matter whether it was factually true. Does my statement of truth correspond with reality? What mattered is, does it give us power and does it work? Watch out for pragmatic truth. It's super, super dangerous. All of these are. It's maybe the most dangerous one. And then the final one is nihilism, which means there is nothing. Nothing is true. Material nihilists will say we only know things through our brains. So therefore, everything that we call truth is actually coming out of our brains. We'll talk about that one more in a second, for just a minute. We don't have long. We have passive relativists that say since we can't, there may be such a thing as truth, but we can never know it, so what's the point? Which is just lazy and cowardice, in my opinion. Then you have literal nihilists, nihilist meaning nothing, that there is nothing at all, there is no truth, and there is no reality either. Okay? You can get that argument. Sometimes Christians will even end up saying something like that. When you argue about something, they're like, well, God can do anything. Like, I mean, yes, that doesn't mean there's no such thing as reality. There's still such a thing as reality. Many religions around the world don't believe, most pagan religions don't believe in reality. Hinduism doesn't believe in reality. Things like that, those are vital. But also more and more often, secular scientists don't believe in reality. They believe that reality is what we cause it to be. There are secular scientists alive today who think the universe exists because you think it exists. And if you stop believing it existed, it wouldn't. I'm still waiting for the jump off the building test among these scientists. Deny gravity and jump. And when they hit the bottom, you go, hey, you just didn't believe hard enough, right? You got to really believe. All right, so let's have some fun with this real quick. I'm going to help you out. What about these visual illusions? Don't they prove that truth just comes from our brain? That we can fool our eyes should prove that there is no such thing as reality we can even evaluate, right? In fact, let me mess with you for just a second. Remember my truth claim? Is that an apple? Or is it a picture of an apple? Oh, shoot! Right? And how do you know it's an apple? I mean, it could be a computer-generated rendering of an apple. It could be a piece of plastic made to look like an apple. Right? It could be a painting of an apple that just is so realistic it looks like a real apple. You see how complicated truth actually gets when you really deal with it? Now, some of you immediately are like, oh, no, I can no longer believe anything forever. Like, at this moment, you just detached from reality, and you're now in the Matrix or something. So how much does the perspective impact our understanding impact the reality of truth? Look at the power of illusion to mess with our understanding of truth. So if you make a truth claim about that, make a truth claim about the color of the bottom square. It is? Right. White is what you're going to say. And the top square? Gray. But when you take out the visual cues of the center, it turns out they're both the same color. Those two squares are both the same color. But your eyes, because of the visual cues of the shading in the middle, because we've learned as apex predators that we have to be able, shading is very, very important to us. And if you're going to hunt down little animals, you've got to understand camouflage and shading and stuff like that. So our brain interprets shading to show the difference between these two things. But when you take away the visual cues of the shade, that's the same picture, just with a black line over the middle. That when you take away the visual cues, we see something different. And you go immediately, now make your truth claim again. And you go, oh my gosh, my claim about truth, white block, gray block, did not match reality. And doesn't that scare you? That you could be fooled that easily? Now notice, so you'll notice, doesn't affect whether or not there is such a thing as reality. In fact, this is what we loved about that video. When we watched this less bright guy get blasted by the very bright guy, the less bright guy said, this should end the whole argument. This should end the whole, visual illusion should end the whole argument. It shows that we only have access to our brain. We don't have access to reality. And the guy says, then how do you know there's such a thing as illusion? In fact, the fact that you would call it an illusion implies that you already know there's such a thing as reality. You would never call a coin counterfeit unless you knew there was a real one. We actually do know there's such a thing as truth. And we all know it. We all know there's such a thing as truth. That's why we say the truth claim didn't match reality. We call that an illusion. When we get fooled into making a truth claim that isn't based in reality, that's called an illusion because, ladies and gentlemen, we all believe and agree that there is such a thing as reality. What we all confessed is we were wrong. Not, there's no such thing as reality. Do you see the difference? I hope you see the difference. We can make a truth claim because we understand the concept of counterfeits. We get that. We understand that, right? Counterfeits imply, we wish that guy on the argument had a microphone so he could drop it. Counterfeits indicate, imply, and convince us that we know something other than the counterfeit. That actually ends the argument. The other direction. Here's what we know. Truth does not come from inside. It comes from the claim of the reality that is outside. That's called discovery. We get to discover truth. We make a truth claim and then we test it based on reality. That's what it means to have to speak the truth. We have lots of ways of doing this. Hopefully what we know and believe is the truth. This is what's wild, guys. This is what one of the things I love about this event is that this is what I was not raised on this. I was raised to believe that Christianity was essentially a denial of reality. I was raised with a check your brain at the door version of Christianity. Don't ask questions. Don't ask questions like that. And those of you seeing The Wizard of Oz, I was raised unintentionally with a pay no attention to the man behind the curtain version of Christianity. Don't ask questions like that. If you ask a hard question, you actually might get disciplined for it. You know what? You need to sit outside. Like, I guess I know certain questions you're not supposed to ask. So when I became a youth minister at 19, one of my rules was, you can ask. We either serve a God of truth or he's not the right God. And if he's a God of truth, he's certainly not afraid of questions. You're afraid of questions. I'm afraid of questions. He's not afraid of questions. So we're allowed to ask these questions. He has truth. He doesn't wonder whether he has truth. God's claim of truth and reality always match perfectly. He never makes a claim that isn't reality. He cannot lie, and he cannot be wrong. That's important. I cannot even begin to tell you how important that is. Yes, we have lots of different ways that we can experience those different things. Intuition, teaching, history, scientific study, philosophy, reason, logic, and revelation directly from God. If I make a truth claim, these are at least five ways that I can evaluate reality. What is reality? Can I know it? How can I know reality? We have lots of ways of discovering reality, of engaging with reality, and comparing it to our claim. Here's the claim. Now we evaluate it based on these things. Hopefully they go together. When they line up, that's called truth. That's the correspondence theory of truth. If I make a truth claim, the partnership between the speaker and the listener to come to a conclusion, and then compare that to reality. 1 Corinthians 13:11 says, when I was a child, I spoke like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. Notice that, I reasoned like a child, I thought like a child. When I became a man, I gave up childish ways. The question we come to in this event weekend all the time is there a God and does he speak? Uh-oh. Oh, my watch is 5 minutes slower than my thing up here. That threw me off. Bummer. All right, but that's okay. We're about done. John 8:43 says, why do you not understand what I say? It's because you cannot bear to hear my word. Jesus is speaking to the religious leaders of his time. You are of your father the devil, and your will to do your father's desire. He was a murderer from the beginning, and he does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character, for he is a liar and the father of lies. But I tell you the truth, and you won't believe me. See, belief and truth don't always go hand in hand. It's our goal is to have them lock step together. It is necessary that there's such a thing as truth. The fact of the truth, it is that the truth and reality that it's based on is outside of us. The claim may be from inside of us, but the reality is outside. Freedom comes from the fact that some things are true. Identity doesn't mean much without freedom, and it means nothing without truth. I hate that one of our Supreme Court judges a few years ago said this phrase, at the heart of liberty is the right to define one's own concept of existence, of meaning, of the universe, and the mystery of human life. I mean, okay, maybe that's freedom. Unfortunately, you can be wrong. John 8:31, Jesus said to the Jews who had believed him, if you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. The truth is you are treasure according to God's claim, and that only matters if there's such a thing as truth, and God always says it, and the reality is, whether you believe it or not, that you're treasure, and that you're created in his image. There's so much there. How will we know what is right and who we are and what our value is without something outside of us, a reality proclaiming that? We either agree with it or we don't.